Okay, invite you as a reminder, you're invited to join us tomorrow evening for extended discussion about principles and applications arising from chapter 2. I would not anticipate we'll be live streaming that, just be a discussion for anyone that wants to partake of that. So if you want to be part of that, be here if you can, 7 o'clock. We're still working on some aspects of that format and so forth. So, but at the very least, hope that you'll be praying about that. Okay, so we know that the things that we're studying in this letter are on some level cumulative, right? We're learning principles, we're seeing principles, and they're building on one another. And if we look at chapter 3, say verse 15, as a central verse in this letter, I think there's good reason to think that it is, because Paul is telling us why he has written the letter, then this letter is building our understanding of the way things should be in a local church. And so, again, we're accumulating principles that build on one another. For instance, God's people need instruction about avoiding and rejecting strange teaching, and different adjectives are used about that. Many of the Christians were spending their time engaged in all sorts of discussion that the text calls vain or fruitless, certainly not harmless, very harmful things. Why? Because the fruit of the Spirit, to borrow some Galatians language, was not being produced in the lives of the hearers, and that's always cause for concern. Paul sets forth the goals of sound instruction, to save sinners, produce in every believer the heart, mind, and character of Christ. The text says a pure heart, good conscience, sincere faith, ultimately love. Another principle we see, it's the role of gospel preachers. When we get to Titus 1, we see it's shepherds as well, to ensure that vital teaching is not withheld. Strange, damaging teaching is confronted and addressed, and of course that takes great patience. And then recently we've begun to see teaching pertaining not just to the message we uphold, but to each of us individually as members. Different members need specific teaching. Although I will add, we've also seen some principles that apply broadly to everyone. Okay? Principles like holiness and godliness and submissiveness and what else? I'm just blanking out all of a sudden.
Modesty.
A quiet spirit. Lots of different principles that we see. It is pleasing to God. We've talked about prayer. It is pleasing to God for us to be a praying people. We've talked about that. And then instruction to men and women, which of course we've discussed most recently and will continue to discuss tomorrow night. So that's where we're at in the letter. Most recently, if we were to sum up maybe a lot of what we've studied in chapter 2, especially toward the end, what is God asking men and women to do for His sake, for the sake of the gospel? To gratefully submit to the places in which He has placed us, right? 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 18, I believe, says that God has placed each member in the body just as He desired. And He always does so for His great purpose and to His glory. And so Paul is urging all of us to gratefully submit to His greater good and His greater order. So we segue from that point. And again, these chapter divisions were put there by men. In some ways, you could say the thought continues. The principles continue to build. We've been saying essentially, I mean, there are different ways to express this. Here's another. That we need to be gospel-centered, kingdom-centered, will of God-centered men and women as part of God's family. Well, as it happens, chapters 3 and 4 provide us with some descriptions, especially chapter 3, of what spiritually mature, gospel-centered men and women should be, what their lives should look like. Now, of course, there's a special focus on what in chapter 3? Description of men who serve as elders and deacons, and not just them, their wives. But it's a picture of spiritual maturity, isn't it? And as we've noted many times properly, these are descriptions that largely should describe each and every one of us. So in that vein, let's take a look at that. Chapter 3 centers on the character, the capability, and the care of elders and deacons and their wives. We're going to focus on that today. Really, we're going to just look at a portion of that, as you'll see. But then chapter 4, after pausing at the end of 3 to affirm why he's writing all of this, in chapter 4, he warns, coupled with that, warns against apostasy. He switches his attention to who in chapter 4? I think he's still talking about gospel-centered leadership. He's talking to Timothy, the preacher, and urging him, among other things, to be disciplined in his work and to give himself completely to his work. God willing, we'll try to look at that on Wednesday. All right, so what I'd like to do now is just, I want to start with some initial broad brush remarks about chapter 3 and then get into some more specific remarks about one particular verse. So one theme we could assign to chapter 3 is gospel-centered leadership or gospel-centered leaders, right? We're talking about people. Okay, so we note, think about this. There is a very notable contrast here. We're familiar with chapter 3. We studied this quite a bit. Even us together, right? I think it was about a year and a half ago that we had some sermons on leadership. And then fourth quarter of 21, we had our Kingdom Leaders class, if memory serves. Could be wrong about that, but it's been less than 2 years ago. And you know, probably every couple of years we need to be studying passages like that. I want you to think, though, set aside your familiarity with this, and I want you to think about what he's been saying in the book. And I think we see a contrast here in these first three chapters. Between, say, those who are governed by wrath and a spirit of quarreling. Remember the statement in chapter 2 and verse 8? Lift up what kind of hands? Holy hands without wrath and dissension, I think some translations say. Think of the contrast between that and these people in chapter 3. That's quite a contrast, isn't it? Because the people in chapter 3 are governed by what? Not wrath, not dissension. They're governed by the impartiality of God. They're governed by the character of God. So we see that contrast. There's an even greater contrast between the men in chapter 1 and the men in chapter 7. Some of the men in chapter 1 were trying to position themselves as what? Yeah, they were trying to position themselves as teachers. They were false teachers. But they positioned themselves, or were trying to, as these enlightened teachers. Right? And they had everybody, you know, engaged in speculation and questions and myths and endless genealogies. Yeah, and Paul doesn't pull any punches in describing exactly what. They weren't mature in their understanding. We might say they didn't understand what they thought they did. And also, just didn't have the goals of the gospel in their hearts. And you could see the fruits of that. Okay, so you've got those people. So contrast those men from chapter 1 with these men in chapter 3. There's quite a contrast there, isn't there? In chapter 3, we have those who desire and subsequently aspire to see to it that God's people are receiving what in terms of teaching? sound doctrine. And maybe to put some more description with that, the teaching and guidance that they need to grow, to achieve the goals of the gospel, the pure heart, the sincere, the clear conscience, the sincere faith, those statements from chapter 1. The things that they need to grow to maturity. So you have some teachers that are trying to position themselves, we might say build their brand, and then you have teachers who have the goals of the gospel in their heart. And of course, the work of elders is very much centered around teachers. We're going to remind ourselves after a while what Ephesians... Well, let's go there now. Ephesians chapter 4, verses 8 through 16. Let's be reminded. When I was reading 1 Timothy 3, I thought of a text that, again, I'm sure is familiar to many of you. But verse 8 in Ephesians 4 says of Christ that when he ascended on high, he led captive a host of captives and gave gifts to men. And when we skip down to verse 11, we see what some of those gifts were. What gifts did he give to the church? Now, these are some gifts. You won't find these under a Christmas tree, right? These are much better. He gave apostles. How about that? And he gave some as prophets and some as evangelists. And notice that the last two words, remember conjunction, junction? Conjunction and? Pastors and teachers. Now, there are other teachers besides pastors. He's talking about shepherd leaders there, overseers, elders. To what end is he giving all of these gifts? For the equipping of the saints for the work of service, to the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith, and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. So why are these teachers given? They're all teaching roles, if you think about it. They're given for the growth, for the maturation of every member, and furthermore, for the unification of the body. He goes on to talk about how all of this results in good for the body as a whole. Verse 14 is a result. We're no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine. That's 1 Timothy 1. But speaking the truth in love, which is what these men in 1 Timothy 3 are going to do, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. So you see it right there. These are men in 1 Timothy 3 who have the demonstrated ability to help Christians grow. And where did they first demonstrate that, of course?
In their homes.
But the ability to serve and to be effective at shepherding souls. So that's quite a contrast, isn't it, between chapter 1 and chapter 3. Sometimes we study chapter 3 because we have a specific purpose for going there. Maybe the church is thinking about appointing elders, and I think sometimes we miss the broader context of why this text is even there in the first place. And you have themes like the goals of the gospel. That has to be part of our consideration of church leadership. So I find that contrast very useful between 1 and 3. I think chapter 3 makes very clear that Jesus is seeking to shepherd his flock today through the agency of men who fit the description of chapter 3. And we have, of course, a very thorough description of, and you've heard me, I'm going to use these points again. I guess part of the reason why I'm using them is we used these a year and a half ago. We talk about the capability of a man, the character of a man, and the care that a man has demonstrated. Those are certainly three things that these descriptions bring out. In fact, let me take that a step further and note something about this text. You look at the description of someone who serves as an elder. We've got it in the text. And then you look at the description of the man that would serve as a deacon. And then don't forget to look at the description of a woman who is the wife of one of those men. And what do we see in all of that? We obviously see some distinctions between them that obviously we shouldn't overlook. But what about the general character of all of these people? Pretty much the same, aren't they? Do you see similar language in all of the descriptions? Are there any common characteristics that the text says these people have? Give me one. Danny?
I think one would be a theme that we see through the whole book, and that's how to be respectful to one another, and how by being respectful and using sound doctrine, mm-hmm. it builds the body.
Being respectable, seeking to build the body. Lauren?
Being self-controlled.
Self-controlled. Whether explicitly listed for each person in the chapter, it would be implied. I mean, other language would be used that would point to the idea of self-control. For instance, the word temperate. And I like the word temperate because it sounds a lot like temperature. And sometimes one application of being temperate means keep your temperature down. So I like that similarity. It helps me. Okay. Chill. Keep it under control. Okay? So the general character of all of these people is to be very much the same in a lot of ways. In fact, this harkens back to something that I believe we discussed during class, and certainly after class there was some discussion about this. Notice a word that at least three times occurs in this letter. Ready? Chapter 2, verse 9. Oh, I'm in Ephesians. That will not do. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9. Someone read that for us, please.
Also,
Danny. Oh, go ahead, Luke.
Also, the women are to dress themselves in modest clothing with decency and good sense, not with elaborate hairstyles, gold, pearls, or expensive apparel.
Okay. How did your translation begin that verse?
Also.
Mine says, likewise. But it means also, in similar fashion, likewise. All right, how about chapter 3 and verse 8? So in chapter 2, what Luke just read, God has given instruction to men, lift up holy hands, etc., etc. Likewise, so what does that tell you? There's something about that, of what he said to men, that also applies to women. There's a similar undergirding principle there. It may apply in different ways. Okay, then we come to chapter 3 and verse 8, and he's given instruction concerning the qualifications of elders. And then interestingly, verse 8, Danny, you got that? Green?
Oh, yeah. Deacons likewise are to be men worthy of respect, sincere, not indulging in much wine, and not pursuing dishonest gain.
Okay, deacons likewise. You say also here?
Likewise.
Oh, it says likewise. Okay. What translation is that, by the way?
CSB,
okay. Deacon, and what translation were you reading?
NIV,
okay. I have the New American Standard 95. You have to give the year anymore because there's a New American Standard 2020, 1995, and the original 1971. It says likewise in the 95. Okay, chapter 3, stay in chapter 3, verse 11. Okay, so now he has just given instruction about the character and capability of men serving as deacons. And interestingly, verse 11 says, women must likewise. So what does that tell you? There are some similar, some similar principles being taught here. He's saying many of the same things. The language may change appropriately, given the application the Spirit's trying to make. And we saw the same thing we read from 1 Peter 3. In fact, a couple of times you have that in 1 Peter 3. At the end of 1 Peter 2, it's talking about how Jesus entrusted himself to the will of the Father. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. He kept entrusting himself to the Father. And then, chapter 3 and verse 1, in the same way, wives. And then chapter 3 and verse 7, husbands likewise. That seems to be a common device used. I mean, Peter's using it. Paul's using it. Danny Green?
He says in the same way.
In the same way.
Yeah.
Where does it say in the same way?
In verse 11, in the same way their wives.
Oh, in 1 Timothy.
Yes.
1 Timothy 3:11. Wives in the same way. Okay? And when we get to Titus, Phil Gerald's going to lead us in a study of chapters 2 and 3. We're going to see that same kind of overlap. Instructions given to older and younger men and women. And so, again, several principles applicable to all of us. You know, godliness, humility, submissiveness, dignity, being respectable, self-control, beyond reproach, have a clear conscience, sound in faith. And he taught Timothy to teach this, and he taught Titus to teach this. Other general comments about it, broad comments about what you see in chapter 3.
God didn't want to leave it to us to determine the qualifications for those that are leading the church.
Right. He cares about it. You think of the care that he's given in spelling out, here's what I need in this man. Here, and frankly,
women as far as wives.
Yes, here's what I need of men and women. And again, I think he started this well back in chapter 2. Get a gospel mindset, get a kingdom mindset, and there's a certain heart that and character being described here. Other thoughts?
You know, I like in the way 14 on kind of captures, you know, we need to hear this. You know, we need to know how to behave. If I'm to treat you in a way where you love me,
yeah.
You know, I can't be mean to you to get to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, balanced, measured. Bill Gerald.
I'm going to just visit a little bit on the question of the difference between the folks in chapter 1 and the folks in chapter 3. I don't know that there's as stark a difference as it jumps out at me. You know, I kind of think if some folks came into the service there and looked around and saw folks, you know, they would see folks getting up and talking about basically Judaizing.
Right.
But see that these are very religious persons who maybe have their life together as a family, as et cetera,
right.
Et cetera. You know, the problem dealing with there in 1 and 4, I think in 5 as well, is this focus and why you have chapter 2 and as chapter 3 as much is, you know, is the focus on the external, which the old law had. You know, the old law was about those fruitless,
yeah,
you know, things that didn't count, but people get stuck on those instead of love from a pure conscience, et cetera. So I don't know where that takes us, but I sometimes I think it makes us feel better to look at 3
yeah.
And say, oh, I'm glad I'm not
Luke 18 thinking.
I'm glad I'm not those in 1.
Yeah.
But I think that's not often where things are. And right. Even when he says, I instructed not to teach certain things, he didn't say, I know we're back on 1, but not to teach certain things. They may have continued, know, with some growth, et cetera. It's just a caution, I guess.
Sure.
And I think why his focus is on the internal in chapter three, chapter two, and chapter three,
yeah.
Because where folks got off, where they got off the rail was, okay, let's, you know,
right.
Look at X, X, and X, and,
right.
And et cetera, as in, where's your heart?
Right. Right. Well, based on when you first come into a church, it may not be immediately obvious. We're emphasizing for the sake of Bible study, here's this person and this person. And from heaven's viewpoint, there may be a very clear distinction. But there's obviously discernment needed that it really kind of, to your point, is why we need men like and women like those described in chapter 3 in a local church. To have that discernment, that understand, okay, we need to have a talk. When we come to Titus 1, we're going to see the same thing. Why? There's a reason Paul gives for why he says, Titus, you need to appoint elders in every city. Because there were people teaching things that they shouldn't for the sake of dishonest gain. And it may not have been, I would grant, it may not have been immediately obvious that that's, but a careful, when a spiritually discerning, careful, loving person hears that, it's like, okay, I'm hearing something, right?
Sure.
I appreciate that comment. Yeah. Yeah, Jake.
I was just thinking there's pieces in there for everybody at every stage of where they're at.
Sure.
You know, I think just in life, there's very few things you could say you've achieved perfection on. So you're continually working, even as a deacon or an elder or these positions, you're still going to be working on your self-control. You're still going to be working on these things constantly. You were never just like, I'm done.
Yeah. And if you ever think you are, you need to go circle right back in the flow diagram to that point. Have I reached the pinnacle of maturity? I think the answer is yes. Then you go to a box that says no. Yeah, stay humble. Danny Anderson.
I think what is the important thing in these descriptions of the elders and deacons is that the qualities that are listed there are listing of men and women who are striving not to serve self, but to be in service to others, but to be in service to God.
Sure.
Contrasting the gentlemen, the people that were in chapter 1, they were serving self.
There was an internal motive there that God could see. Yeah.
But, you know, if you're looking to serve God and you're looking to try to help his flock to grow, if you're going to be teaching, you're going to try to be motivated, you're trying to be encouraging the people, there's something different about the individuals themselves who are doing this teaching.
Yeah.
They're not for self gain. Because Lord knows you don't gain from this. Sometimes you have many sleepless nights.
Yeah. You know. You've worn that hat. How many years were you an elder? Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot.
10 or 11.
Okay, double digits. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Respect. Yeah. Appreciate those comments. Well, let's get now. We've got a few minutes left. I want to make some specific remarks about one verse. And I don't know. I guess for me, you know, when we've studied this in the past, I mean, we tend to gravitate toward the description of the character, right? And sometimes we read verse 1 and, okay, yes, the man must desire the work and then move right on into verse 2 and following. I want to look at verse 1 with you for a little bit. Just been chewing on this. I want to see what you think about this. All right, so verse 1 says, it is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it's a fine work he desires to do. So I got looking at that first thing that stands out is the expression, it is a trustworthy statement. That's an expression used, I believe, some five times at least in these three letters, the two to Timothy and the one to Titus. It is a trustworthy statement. Put that in your own words. Danny?
Sets his heart on.
Sets his heart on?
Yeah.
For it's a trustworthy statement?
For aspires.
Oh, for aspires. What does it say for a trustworthy statement?
Trustworthy statement.
Oh, a trustworthy statement. Okay. But table that. I want to come back to that sets his heart on. Denise?
It says a faithful saying.
It's a faithful saying?
It says a true saying.
Okay. A true saying. We might say it's a statement you can take to the bank. You can absolutely count on it, right? It's absolutely reliable. It is faithful. It is trustworthy. Okay, so whatever follows is in that vein. So think about that. I want to work backwards in this text. What is it that he is affirming bottom line that is trustworthy? Seems to me what he's affirming that is trustworthy is that the work of serving as an overseer is a fine work. That's his point. Now, a man may or may not desire that, aspire to that, but that's not what he's affirming is that it is a fine work. Okay, so now let's do some work on that word. By the way, Paul cautions about wrangling about words. We don't want to be guilty about that. But I like this sort of study in the different translations is very useful. The Greek word here, kalos, is used over 100 times in the New Testament. General meaning? Now here's the general meaning of the word. Think of this, fine work, attractively good, beautiful. Inspiring others to embrace what is lovely. Do you get that vibe with the work of an elder? Inspiring others to embrace what is lovely? Here the meaning is more along the lines, to kind of, you know, narrow this a little bit, praiseworthy. Okay, what do your translations say? Fine work.
Desires a noble task.
Noble task, same thing. It's a good work. A good work. When we get into Titus, we'll talk a lot about good works. Well, this is a good work. It's a noble work, a noble task, a fine work, a good work. Is that how I see that? This statement was written for all of us. All of us should see this work as necessary. But more than that, noble, good, and if I can pull the general meaning into this, beautiful. And should inspire us all to do some desiring and aspiring of our own, to embrace what is lovely. Okay, so now we bring in what this work involves. Because that is a measure of I can profess, yes, I think this is a great work. Is the exercise, think of how the exercise of shepherd leadership, the actual work. So let's bring in some terms here that give it, it's shepherd leadership. So I want you to think of actual shepherds with actual sheep and what shepherds have to do to sheep sometimes. Actually, let me restate that. What they have to do for sheep. It's not always pleasant for the sheep. There's oversight. Is that something we see as honorable? Do I continue to hold up the work, which may involve these men doing things for my good that I don't like, as an honorable thing, a noble thing, a good thing? Yes, necessary, but we all get it's necessary, but in my heart, do I see it as noble? Dan?
Serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly. not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. And then it goes on to be an example.
Yeah. So there's an eagerness. So that verse speaks to how the men who are serving in that capacity see the word. It is something they eagerly give themselves to. Then we look at 1 Thessalonians. That was perfect timing. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 12. But we request of you, brethren, appreciate those who diligently labor among you. I think that language means, you can check me on this, is to lead before the mind. So there's consideration, there's thought, dare I say meditation about this. Appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction. And then maybe this is where it says lead before the mind. And that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. And to that point, live in peace with one another. So, yeah, Hebrews 13, verse 17 says, obey them, submit to them. What about my view of them and the work that they do? Is it, do I see it as honorable? All right, now we're going somewhere with this, you might guess. That brings me to two other words in chapter 3 and verse 1, the word aspire and the word desire. Have we had the first bell yet? Oh, goody. The word aspire means to stretch out or to reach after. The word desire can be translated covet. It can be translated lust after. But there's your language, Danny Green. Set your heart upon. So the NIV actually uses that expression. Set your heart upon. So you've got an internal desiring and then an aspiring, a reaching out. So it seems to me the desiring begets the aspiring, right? If you don't have the desire, there will be no aspiration. I mean, because something stirs you to reach out after. So here's the question. I said all of that to ask this. How does that come about? I mean, we say, well, a man has to desire the work. Yes, that's true. Let's talk about that. How does that desire come about? Think about how it is these men develop the capability and character, and how it is played out and proven in their lives before becoming elders. Where is that desire first? Chris?
Well, like the desire to give back, the desire to give to the congregation.
Sure. The desire, yeah, just in general, because probably, I mean, we could think, well, because God has loved me, that's probably where it first starts, right? Is it begets a desire to serve, okay? Where else is it cultivated? Danny?
It seems to me the character of the elders and deacons that he's talking about is a part of your whole development, your whole being. So you have to start early on and desire these qualities of being second, or serving.
As I look at the text, wouldn't this be cultivated within the home? Where is the love of shepherd leadership developed? So now that really makes this an uncomfortable question. Do I see the work of shepherding in my... You see, I'm working backwards here because it's like, okay, a lot of times you say, okay, well, the man doesn't desire it. Well, maybe we ought to be asking, why is that? Because, and I understand there are different factors that impact whether a person serves as a shepherd. I'm not trying to oversimplify this. But on some level, we ought to all, as parents, see the work of shepherding as a beautiful, honorable, noble, good work. And I say that as someone with his eyes wide open. I'm a dad of a 20-something, two teenagers who could not be more different, and a 9-year-old that will soon rule the world, just to let you know. With, God willing, more phases to get to that some of you know far more about. Parenting can just be hard. I mean, look, this could preach, couldn't it? But parenting can be really hard. And what I'm wondering is if we get so down in our parenting, I'm saying this to me, I lose the love of shepherding. Well, then it's like, man, I'm just glad to have these kids out of the house. I certainly don't want to shepherd a whole church full of them. We wonder why we lack men to serve. And so, plug for the parenting class. Maybe one of the things we need to do is light the fire of our, you know, get the joy back for parenting our kids. Just a thought. Bible study thought. Finally, we're out of time, but other thought, Tiffany.
I would just say we can't leave the Holy Spirit out of that.
No. No, we can't. No, we can't. Well said. No, we can't. Oh, sorry, Candace. Yeah. So yeah, there's the role of the Spirit in helping us grow into the image of Christ. There's the example of Jesus that inspires us to serve, all of that. I just sat there looking at this. Again, this is just thoughts for Bible study. It's like, man, sometimes we really, I mean, sometimes the issue isn't qualified men. It's just, they're just out of gas and maybe just don't desire the work. And I just think that's sad. I think that's tragic. And I think that's a situation that ends up being a negative for God's people. All right, we got to stop. Wednesday, chapter 4.